Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. What's upsetting you? Somebody just sent me some photographs, and, yeah, you know, I get, I don't know, I just,
You get what?
I get crazy. There's nothing that'll make you crazier in this world. Nothing in this world at all that will get you crazier. And nothing in this world that will... You want to know, I said this to a friend of mine the other day, and I meant this. Do you want to know what will stop your dreams, from coming true quicker than anything you can possibly imagine? And I mean this, and you're going to think I'm being a curmudgeon, and I'm not. I'm going to give you a piece of advice now, all right?
Well, it must be important because you're undoing your pants like it's Christmas.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, either one. It's because I'm just, you know, it's wearing on my... never mind.
Yeah, please, get riding up the crotch, huh?
None of your business. You know what'll stop your dreams faster than anything in this world? Falling in love. Falling in love.
Oh, Phil, don't be a cynic.
No, I'm not being a cynic. I'm telling you right now, the very thing that some people think they want more than anything in this world, the easiest thing that there is to get more than anything in this world is love. That's right. That's exactly right. It's the easiest. You can fall in love tomorrow, man. You can find somebody and fall in love tomorrow. It ain't that big of a deal. It doesn't take that long. It isn't that tough. We all want it. We all look for it. We all search it out higher, more than anything else. You know, oh, my God, if we can fall in love. Oh, God, if we just had this, and if we just had the perfect woman, the perfect guy, it wouldn't matter. We could live in a tent. It wouldn't matter. Yeah, uh-huh. Guess what? Yeah, it would. And it's an irony because you can be in love and certainly the very early stages of love, and you can think you are on a rocket sled, man. You know, you're on the greatest roller coaster ride in the history of the world. But it is also that rocket slide, that roller coaster, that thing, that love that makes you think that all things are possible. It is also the very thing that will stop you from taking that extra chance, from rolling the dice one more time, from going out and trying it one more time. It will stop you from doing that. And the other thing that I think is wrong. Now, I'm not down on love.
Well, it sounds like it to me. It sounds to me like you have decided that love is the thing that stops everything.
No, that's not what Mr. Henry's saying. You gotta listen to him.
Wait a minute. Now, I'm not down on love, but I'm telling you that it is and that's the thing about life, the paradoxical story of life sometimes, you know, as the song said.
I know that's the story of, and that's the glory of love. You remember that? You know that song, Margaret?
Yes, I do. That's the story of, that's the glory, do-do-do.
Yes, sing everything. Yes.
Yeah, I do. In fact, now that I know you don't like it, now I will. That's the story of...
Oh, hold on, please, God.
I'm just saying to him, you know, if he wants it, he can have it. You want some, you got it. When I get it, you'll get it.
You're right. So, I'm telling you, man, there will be a day that this right hand connects. It's coming fast.
Yeah.
No, it is. It's around the corner. The day will arrive. The right hand will connect. Boom! And then you'll say to yourself as you are dropping backwards, bud, wow, he really meant it. Boo, bang.
That's about how what's going to happen, too.
So what I'm trying to say is the following thing. It is one of the great paradoxes of life. Nonetheless, it is true. And, you know, it's when you fall in love, and let me tell you something, you think that's the goal. You think that, oh, I got married. Look at all the schmucks and all of the people in this world. I'm sorry to have to say this. But look at all the people in this world that fell in love, had a family, got married, this, that. Next thing you know, what happened? The bottom drops out of it. You didn't know who you married. I mean, there are those tragic stories. Yes, there are the good stories. Yes, there are the people that, you know, make it work. But I'm telling you, you know, just like Muriel's Wedding. You see that movie?
Oh, that was I love that movie. Was really cute.
Is that the fat girl that,
Well, don't call her a fat girl.
Yes, she was a fat girl. She was pretty fat. She, big fat girl want to get married, right?
Yeah, she was an overweight girl. She lived in Australia. It's a great movie. It's in fact, it's the breakout hit for God, what's the name of the actress? Great actress. I forget her name now, a little redheaded actress. She was in Sixth Sense. She played the mom in Sixth Sense.
Yes, it was Betty Slevin.
Betty Slevin?
I don't know, but I came up with a name.
Somebody look it up on IMDb. Anyway, it was her big breakout role, Muriel's Wedding, and also Rachel Griffiths was in that movie. A lot of really good actors in that movie. And she's a little girl. She's a lady. I said little girl. She's a young woman, and she lives in Australia with her family, with her loser family. And it really is kind of a loser family, with this father who dreams of being an important guy in politics. Very, very specific, terrific movie. The characters are absolutely drawn from real life. You can just tell. And here's Muriel, and she wants to get married. Now, understand, I said she wants to get married. She doesn't care to who. She just was. It's not that she wants to fall in love with that Mr. Wonderful and meet the right guy and have children and get married. No, she just wants to get married. She thinks the actual act of getting married, the sacrament of getting married, the ritual, the rite of marriage, she thinks that that act will somehow propel her into a new state of being, of consciousness, of living, of personhood. She thinks that being married, almost like a magical rite or a mystical rite, will sprinkle some fairy dust on her and she'll become a new woman. And she'll be accepted by people and she'll be loved by her friends and she'll be in with the girls that she was never in with at school. There's this whole cadre of the typical social girls. They're all blondes and they're all cute, and at least in their minds. And they all vacation together. And Muriel, she wants to hang with them. So she goes to the same place that they vacation. And she sits there kind of, you know, two tables away and stares at them and waves, hoping she'll be invited over with them. And she never really is. And finally she is. But then they're really, quote, honest with her. You know how some women can be with each other. She's, Muriel, let us just tell you, you know, you're really fat and you're really inappropriate and you laugh too loud and there's a million things that are wrong with you. And if you correct all these problems, then you'll be cool with us. And poor Muriel buys into this until she meets this girl. I think it's a classmate of hers or something. She meets her who's down to earth, real.
And that's the one played by Rachel Griffiths. I love that character. And the poor girl gets crippled.
Well, hold on. For God, Margaret, you give the whole thing away?
Well, the movie's been out for like a billion years. How many people do you think not seen it yet?
There's probably a lot of people that haven't seen it. I don't think the movie was all that big. You know, it was not a big box office smasheroo here in America. It was made in Australia. And fantastic movie. But anyway, this friend of hers, they get together, and she finds her real self with this friend. She finds out who she really is, you know? She finds out she's Muriel, and she's just going to be Muriel, and she can't be anything other than that. And she's going to go back to her home where she left her family, and she's going to lay it on the line to her father and all his bull crap, and she's going to lay it on the line to her family, and she's going to come back and take care of her brothers and sisters, because the house is a mess, and her brothers and sisters really need a strong hand, and her mother has just got busted for shoplifting and is on her way into the nut house, and the father's left. The whole thing is real goofy, but you get a sense, and I won't give you the rest of the movie, because that ain't the end of the movie.
You just gave it away.
No, I didn't. That's not the end of the movie.
Oh, it's not.
No, it's not. No, no. Far from it. I really recommend it. It's a great movie. And it's all about how marriage, you know, how some people see these things, these rituals, you know, marriage, love. It doesn't matter to who, it doesn't matter to what, it doesn't matter when, it doesn't matter. It just, if you do this, you do that, and you do this, and you do that, you're going to be fantastic. And that ain't the way it is, you know.
Well, that movie said about, well, what are you talking about love, though? You're saying that love...
When you are looking for love and you fall in love and you find love and you're in love and you got the love and she's your love and he's your love and everything is love, man. Man, the last thing you want to do is not have it. You don't want to be out of love. You don't want to not have love. And so all the stuff that is going to take you away from her or away from him, all the stuff that's going to make you feel less than that, you don't want to do. And some of that stuff is the dice rolling and the roulette wheel spinning and the chance taking and all of the things that you got to do in this world to make your way to those, you know, up those golden stairs. You do not in this life find success without taking big chances. And if you're not willing to do that, then that's okay. It's, you know, not a problem, but I'm just talking about, you know.
Well, and if you're willing to gamble big, you better be willing to lose big.
You got that right. You got that right, man. That's the part that really gets people. That's the part that'll destroy you if you're not careful. So
what were you all grousing about?
Nothing, just, I got, let's put it this way. I got some pictures that were messaged to me.
That's what she said.
What?
Man, that doesn't even work, what?
Why'd you say that, buddy? That felt like a wet fart.
What? I said that's what she said.
Yeah, it wasn't funny.
It would, not only was it not funny, it wasn't, it didn't, what?
You're not going to laugh?
No, I ain't laughing. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with something far more serious, something far more important, something far... just anything but what we've been talking about. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Woo! This is my music.
Yeah, it's a guy, old guy music.
Yeah, it's old guy music, whatever. Anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And speaking of old guys, Bob Costas and his being off of the coverage, the Olympic coverage, for as long as, for tonight, I guess, or whenever the hell it happened. Chris Norton had been on our show earlier saying that his pink eye, that is Bob Costas's pink eye, was the result of Bob Costas engaging in, quote, dirty sex, which he attributed to...
Well, let me say it. I'm the female, and it will sound a little less harsh. Chris Norton said that it was the result of butt sex, so...
And you think that sounds less harsh coming from you, huh?
Are you telling me it doesn't?
I'm saying...
You know what? It's fine. It's fine.
No. No, you, the two of you aren't going to get away with it. Are you telling me it doesn't?
Phil, you want me to do it or you?
It doesn't matter who says it, Margaret. It sounds a little harsh, yes.
So me saying what I just said sounds as bad as if Bud said it or one of his tittering motorcycle gang member friends or Robert, or the rest of you guys sitting around a sports bar. Sounds the same.
It doesn't sound the same, but there's no way you can smooth it off and say, well, here, that's what Mr. Norton said. I don't think we had to be that graphic.
That's what that clown said on your program, and I tried to mitigate the harshness of it by being a female voice.
Margaret, don't get upset, please.
Well, I don't...
Margaret, you did the very best you could, but the fact is... That Claude, Chris, and let me tell you something. I don't watch adult films because I'd like to think of myself as a higher quality, a higher grade of man than that. But if I did, I will avoid the Norton Splodes imprature because
Okay.
So you think I will watch those, huh?
Well, what do you... If you did, you would avoid the Norton Splodes imprature.
Yes, I'm assuming he is produces them himself. It's not Caballero, is it?
But you don't watch adult films.
I know the name Caballero from a bachelor party I went to. Is that all right with you?
General, you're lying. You're lying like the dog you are. And
well, you know something? Have a care. Smile when you say that.
Look, we're not in the middle of the Hamilton-Burr duel here, all right?
But
don't worry about it. Just... Everybody back the hell off. Norton Splodes Imprature.
Well, whatever you call it.
Anyway, so what the hell am I talking about? Oh, yeah, so Chris Norton was on the program here talking about that, and I did hear from one of my friends high up at the network level, and they said, I can assure you, Phil, this clown that you had on your show did not in any way, shape, or form influence our... decision to take Bob Costas off the air. Bob was removed from the air by his own volition. He felt that he could not, in all good conscience, be on the air with a big, glowing, big, fat red eyeball sticking out at everybody, almost as if he was some kind of a freak out of the circus.
Did he really say that?
No, he didn't. But anyway...
Well, then why would you say...
In any event, he said that... We were thinking that maybe Bob had had his fingers somewhere and then stuck them in his eyeball as he put his sports jacket on very quickly, hearing the police approaching.
Yeah, you're full of it.
Yes, of course I'm kidding. God, you guys are, you're cracking me up.
What is that?
Nothing. It's a script. I got it.
Let me see that.
You are not allowed to look at that, okay?
Got an audition or anything tomorrow, don't you?
Maybe I do. All right. We wanted to get into some other things here tonight. We've been talking about the Olympics. We talked about Bob Costas, and we certainly have talked a little bit about the great career that Jim McKay had, and got a couple of questions on Twitter from people. As I said to Nikki when I mentioned Jim McKay, I said, you know, Jim McKay is a great broadcaster, and so many of you younger people don't know who Jim McKay was, and that's because Jim McKay retired before a lot of the present generation, and by that I mean people, say, 30 years of age and younger, before a lot of you guys had an opportunity to see him. But he was a terrific, terrific presence on network television, specifically on the sports coverage on ABC. Jim McKay was discovered as a newspaper writer. He was from Baltimore, Maryland. That is where he was plying his trade as a newspaper writer, I guess, for the Baltimore paper. Do you remember, General, the name of the Baltimore?
I want to say it was the Baltimore Sun, but I don't know. But I know that Jim McKay, or the Baltimore Bugle, it was one of those, the Baltimore Bugle or the Baltimore Blurb.
No, it wasn't the Baltimore Blurb. It was the Baltimore Bugle.
No, it was the Baltimore Sun. I did the Baltimore Bugle. What?
Well, what's so funny about that?
There's no Baltimore Bugle. Anyway, we're going to bring on the show to talk, reminisce just a little teeny itsy bit, Don Berman, who will discuss with us the great career that Jim McKay had. And again, as we're looking at this Olympic coverage, Don, we are reminded of Jim McKay and what he meant to the Olympics.
Well, so Jim McKay, I don't think I could pay a higher tribute to Jim McKay than to say what you said earlier in the program. That is his voice on the agony of defeat and the thrill of victory at the beginning of the wide, wide, wonderful, wide world of sports. And the fact that that became, speaking of imprature, General, the fact that that became the signature phrase on the wide, wonderful, wide world of sports, or whatever it was called. I know that we go back and forth on these names.
One of these days, I've got a fond desire that one of these days we get the name of a show right around here. But you're right, Don. It was the wide, wide world of sports.
Well, it's a mouthful, and I say that with all due respect to the argument you had earlier in the week about mouthfuls. I mean, no disrespect to any of the females in the studio tonight, Margaret.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, because there was a great deal of discussion about that.
No, I know. I think if you're going to use a phrase like, boy, that sure is a mouthful, I don't think you want to look at any female in the room and sort of suppress a laugh.
All right. Well, I don't think that was necessary.
You don't talk about me. I didn't do nothing.
No, not now, but you did earlier in the week.
And I just wanted to make that point. On to Jim McKay. Jim McKay, as you said, Phil, was discovered in a newsroom in Baltimore, in I think it was the Baltimore Sun, and he was there as a sports writer. And the Baltimore Sun had just purchased a television station. Now, back in those days, that's what newspapers did. They were the ones that purchased the television license and set up the television. Now, if you look at many of the big broadcast concerns in our country today, WGN was owned at one time by the Chicago Tribune. WTOP in Washington, D.C. was owned by the Washington Post, and so on and so forth. So it was that the station in Baltimore had been purchased by the Baltimore paper, and they needed someone to go on camera, and they literally went into the newsroom and found young Jim McKay sitting there, writing his sports.
What was he doing? Just picking his butt and everything, or what?
Do you want me to talk to him, or am I going to have to?
But hold on, Bud. Don's going to tell the story.
Yeah, but I was just asking. Well, it's a legitimate question.
No, it's not a legitimate question. You just heard Don say he was writing his sports, not picking his butt.
Oh, hold on. There's a phone. Yeah? Yeah, what do you want? I'm on the air right now. Oh, baby, you and that espresso. L. Ron Martin's going to come down here.
Boy, you sure are talking freely with him these days.
Well, what do you mean I'm talking freely?
Oh, yeah? What do you want?
Well, I told him. I said, look, L. Ron, I don't care that you own or are the manager or whatever you do around here, but you had better just stay clear of me. Because, my friend, I am Don Berman, Channel 19 news anchor, and as far as I can tell, you aren't.
Hold on, Don, and we'll be back. Okay, I can already see some kind of a confrontation setting up. We'll see how far along we get with Don Berman as he talks to us from the newsroom tonight about the great career of Jim McKay, the erstwhile anchor on the Olympics. We were just talking about Christmas, so I thought I'd, you know, play some Christmas music.
What are you talking about? This Black Sabbath.
This is more like Halloween.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm kidding. Maybe I'm joking.
Oh, that's the famous Phil Hendry sense of humor.
Anyway, welcome. God, welcome back to the show.
Well, Phil, don't roll your eyeballs at me and go, yeah. Who knows what you're talking about half the time?
Thank you. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com back here with Don Berman on the line. At least General Shaw, you understand.
No, I understand your sense of humor, Phil. You're a kooky cat. You know, as they like to say, you're way out there, and you have a kooky, goofy, cooked out. Isn't that what they say?
Well, they don't say cooked out.
You know, Phil's kooky, you know.
Yeah, but say it, Phil's far out, you know, way out.
Right, you're what the kids will say, you're sick. Boy, that Phil Hendry's sick, and the kookiness of it. You know.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really relies on the word kooky anymore. I think it's, you know, you're sick, you know, it's crazy, whatever. It's funny, you know.
Yeah, but, if you don't mind, I'm just communicating it the way that I feel that a young person should and the way that I would. And you're away kooky, you're kooked out. Now, if you don't like it, that's too bad. That's what I'm saying.
All right, General, you don't have to get aggressive about it.
The guy is a kook. He's way kooky.
Well, now you're saying it like I'm some kind of a guy that would plant a bomb someplace.
No, I'm... Boy, what a weird hat. Did I say anything like that?
Then back off, General.
Shh. What a pain in the...
Hey, you want to get a vanilla wafer?
No, I don't.
You better get some water, because there goes your voice.
My voice or my voice?
Get him some water, will you?
Come on, General, we got to get some water.
The hell with it. And you're too kooky, too.
All right, So, Don Berman, back with us here on the Phil Hendry Show. Don, again, thank you for being with us. We're talking about the great career of Jim McKay. Jim McKay, the longtime anchor on the Olympics, and a man who set the standard, I think, for all of the studio reporting, because Bob Costas is off with Pink Eye.
And I'm glad you brought up Bob Costas. Phil, I will not be unabashed. And I will say to you that I think Bob Costas is overrated, and I think that Bob Costas would do well to sit at the feet of a Jim McKay, keep his big fat mouth shut, and try to cover up the pink eye and try to keep his fingers out of wherever they've been and learn something. So here he comes. Hold on for a minute. It's L. Ron. I'm sorry. Excuse me. How many times are you going to want to get coffee? You asking me a question? I'm sorry.
Is that L. Ron Martin?
Three guesses. I'm sorry. I just got to get... Hey, Eddie, come over and get this coffee, huh? Oh, Ron, later, Berman, okay? Just do your show, Berman. Don't bother me. No, but I just... Don't bother me!
Oh, you really got that guy under control, don't you?
Don't worry about it, okay? Don't worry about it. We have an understanding.
Yeah.
So anyway, Bob Costas would do well to keep his fat mouth shut, cover up his pink eye, God, for whatever he does, don't put his fingers all over Jim McKay, and just sit and listen to what Jim McKay could teach him about anchoring sports coverage in the studio. Because, Phil... I think we all remember the 1972 Olympics.
Yes, we do.
Well, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, though, Don.
Well, it might have been once in a lifetime, but I think Jim McKay and really all of the sports reporters that covered the 72 Olympics showed their mettle, not just as sports reporters, but as news reporters. News reporters. And that, Phil, set the standard for the, oh, you dirty. I'm very, very sorry. Just one moment.
Why don't you move to another place or something?
What?
Why don't you move?
Move? We just bought the house.
I'm talking about where you're on the phone.
Oh. You done? Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. What are you all of a sudden with the questions? Boy, you're a real wiser.
Get someplace where you're away from that espresso machine before I flip.
Sorry, all right. Move over here. Hey, by the way, did you see Sam Rubin? He called Samuel Jackson Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, I saw all about it, yeah.
What a moron. Woo-hoo! Woo! All right, so,
Did you just find out about that?
What's that?
Did you just find out about that?
Oh, I know. I've known that for 2 days.
Well, okay. I mean, it's kind of old news now, isn't it?
Oh, no, I haven't heard you talk about it at all.
Well, it was a local thing, but, yeah, there was a local guy here, folks.
I'll do it since I brought it up, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Phil. Don Berman here. Sam Rubin, who is a local reporter on Channel 5 KTLA, had Samuel Jackson on to do an interview. Well, guess what? He kept calling him Lawrence Fishburne until Samuel Jackson finally flipped his lid on camera and told Rubin that he was basically a blithering idiot and quit calling me Lawrence Fishburne, you jackass. And then he walked off or something, I don't know.
Well, what did he do?
I don't know, I didn't watch it.
Then how do you know what happened?
Because I read about it. I read what I wrote about it.
You read what you wrote about it?
I read the news report, yes.
You wrote the news report?
I wrote the news copy for our 5, 6, 7, 10, and 11 o'clock reports, yes.
Well, if you wrote the news copy, then how do you know what... Why don't you know what happened?
I don't remember what I wrote, if it's all the same to you.
Well, you know something, Don, I don't know how you get away with it, but you do a beautiful job of just, you have bullcrapped your way through, to quote my husband Frank, all right?
Oh, God, don't give me Frank, okay?
No, to quote my husband Frank, you've bullcrapped your way through 35 years of a career.
Yeah, and you know what Frank is blankety-blank through 35 years of? Wouldn't you like to know?
You know, we've been married 35 years.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Hang up on him.
Okay, now wait.
All right, I'm leaving.
I'm sorry, Margaret. You're the one that started this cat fight. She there?
No, she walked out. So I've lost her. I've lost Dickman. I've lost General Shaw. It's you and me, Robert.
That's fine with me.
That's okay. You and Robert, I'll talk to you guys all day and all night. You guys are sensible men. Now, where was I? Ah, yes.
Wait a minute. You're not giving a speech here, okay? So you're talking about Bob Costas and his pink eye. Let's talk about Jim McKay.
I'm talking about Jim McKay. Jim McKay was solid gold. He was the gold standard of sports reporters. When Jim McKay came on television and began to report on a sporting event, you knew he'd done his homework. He knew everything there was to know about that sport. He gave you not only the stats, he gave you not only the facts and the figures, he gave you the background, the color, he gave you the personalities. He was a grade-A interviewer, knew how to talk to people, knew how to bring the best out in people. And when I bring up the 1972 Olympics, Phil, I'm bringing up something that was very tragic, and Jim McKay handled it very, very well. Now...
Okay, Don, thank you. We got to keep this moving along a little bit.
I was about to move it along.
All right, but I want to ask you some questions, if you don't mind. First of all, you know, we're talking about the 72 Olympics. It was a very, very tragic, tragic Olympics with the death of those athletes and the terrorists that took them as hostages. And so to clarify for people, it was Jim McKay and all of the sports guys that were working the Olympics for ABC who were suddenly thrust into the role of being news reporters. And that's what was so impressive about the... Oh, are you kidding me?
Hold on for a minute. What the... Hey, how you doing? Do you have to grab the phone out of my hand? I just want to say hi to Mr. Henry. I'm sorry. Here's your phone back.
Yeah, how you doing?
Here's the phone. He said hi. Hey, how you doing, Phil?
I'm doing great.
All right, great. Just getting some coffee. Hey, get the coffee here. Everybody, I got coffee for you.
You know that Don's on the air?
I say it again?
Don's on the air using that phone.
Oh, you're using this phone? I'm sorry. Good thing I ain't got no pink eye. You know, I've got my hand up. Thanks a lot. God almighty. Oh, God.
What? What's wrong?
Well, the guy mentions pink eye, and he's had his hand all over this phone. Ah, Jesus.
Well, wipe it down with some Lysol or something, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, Don, thank you, man. I'm going to let you go so you can wipe the phone down.
That's the first time anyone's ever said that to me. And you know what makes me feel cheap? It really does. I wanted to talk about Jim McKay, and the lockout is, let me let you go so you can wipe the phone down. I thought you had a higher opinion of me, Phil. I thought we had a close...
All right, Don Berman, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm back.
Good for you, General. Thank you very much.
Well, I didn't want to be sitting in here, especially with that jackball, what's his name? Because that guy tightens my jaws.
Berman?
Yeah, I heard the things he said about Bob Costas. Now, Jim McKay, I love. But when he said that Bob Costas is sitting there like a circus freak with the big red eye, I felt like I wanted to punch him.
Don Berman.
And Bob Costas, yes.
All right, okay. So,
Well, what did you make of that?
What did I make of it? What I made of it was Don Berman going off, blathering again, talking about how he rules the roost over there, and here comes L. Ron Martin with his espresso machine, and Don's just nothing more than a cowering office boy. Okay?
Well, yeah, he doesn't have the power he says he do.
Yeah, that's right, bud. But he is right about Jim McKay and those guys. They turned that the 72 Olympics, which was to be, as all Olympics should be, a celebration of athletic prowess, the world coming together, blah, 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 all that great stuff. And instead, it was a disaster and a nightmare. It was a nightmare and a disaster on a lot of levels. It was a nightmare because the way the Olympics handled that horror of athletes taken hostage, murdered, this gunfight that resulted in the detonation of those explosives, the helicopter coming apart, everything that was the worst possible scenario, and then the Olympics went forward. Now, I understand it because you had to be alive then, and understand the world as it was in those days. The world was trying to get through this muddle of violence that had been erupting. In that part of at least in the Middle East and other parts of the world as a result of the Middle East, that had been erupting full scale for a few years. Now, the Middle East had been a dangerous place since the end of World War II, but it really started getting hot in the late 60s and early 70s. And the world was trying to push through all this stuff. Didn't quite get it. There was so much going on, from the domestic stuff in the United States, in Europe and elsewhere, to the international stuff, that I think people were saying, you know, we can't let this stuff stop us. Let's just keep pushing forward. So it seemed normal to go forward with the Olympics. It didn't seem like a disrespectful thing. Now, in retrospect, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it would have mattered one bit whether they would have stopped or gone forward.
But I'll tell you, the American Olympic Committee at that time was particularly insensitive and ignorant and every other possible thing you could think of. We had a prominent Jewish member of the American Olympic team, Mark Spitz, who was breaking swimming records, but also was at risk. If they were killing Jewish athletes, who was to say that Mark Spitz or any other prominent Jewish athlete was safe? So but through it all, there was Jim McKay and the guys that were sent there to be sports reporters, suddenly news reporters, and man, they were good. They were real good. Howard Cosell, I can't remember who the other guys were, but everybody was on top of it pretty well. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com to wrap up and to clean up and to wipe our phone down, man. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, online at philhendryshow.com, and tune in. Check us out on TuneIn. And coming soon, the Phil Hendry Show highlights will be featured on iTunes. They will go behind our paywall, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, it sounds kind of dirty.
It ain't dirty. They'll go behind our paywall after 5 days, but we will be giving you highlights from the show on iTunes. So I was just talking about upstate New York.
Yes, I heard Nikki. She got very happy because she's from Birmingham.
Binghamton.
Bing, what is it?
But Bing.
Binghamton is the name of the town. Don't start, you know.
Phil, I'm not doing anything. I'm asking you. Where is it?
It's in New York State.
Well, what is Binghamton? I thought it was Birmingham.
Binghamton is the name of the town in New York State. Birmingham is...
Well, now, hold on. Birmingham is in England.
I know that, General. I know.
All right. Why are we talking about Birmingham? Binghamton, New York is where she hails from. And I was in Utica, New York for a summer.
You were there as a disc jockey.
Yes, I was working at an oldies but goodies station.
An oldies but... What's that mean?
Well, let me just tell you there, genius. An oldies but goodies station's oldies station.
That's like K-Earth, the one that goes K-Earth, you know?
That the one that goes K-Earth 101?
Yeah, that's it, bud. What, are you going to be Rain Man now and start singing the jingles?
Damn, that's funny.
Boy, he got you with that one, bud. Really chopped you down.
Yeah, that's not funny.
I think it is.
Rain Man. Well, that's a good nickname for you, bud.
Let's not be cruel now. Come on.
I was just singing a jingle.
Well, good. You sang the jingle, K-Earth 101. Yeah, it's like Oldie Station. That's how I worked at for a summer. And I was there in, I was in Utica, New York. And I was there in the summer of 1975. So, you know, Nikki was born a few years later in Binghamton. But what I remember about upstate New York and the Mohawk Valley there, man, very nice people. I remember things like, you know, the heat in the Adirondack Mountains and driving up to Speculator and places like that.
Now, what is Speculator? That's the town up there?
Yeah, there's a town in the Adirondacks called Speculator. I think it was kind of a summer. And it's also a ski resort. Where I lived in Utica, though, was in the older part, the center part of the city. It was on Genesee was the name of the street, Genesee Street. And I've often told the story that I lived right across the street from a bar called Durante's. In fact, the radio station was also where was across the street from Durante's. And I'd go into this place, and I would drink a beer there, and there was a guy sitting at the end of the bar every single time I was in there who looked like the old actor, song and dance guy, Jimmy Durante. You know who it is, General and Margaret. Do you guys know?
Who, the Jimmy Durante, the guy with the big nose?
Jimmy Durante, the guy with the big nose, yeah. He's that... but anyway, this cat looked just like Jimmy Durante, and he was in this place called Durante's Bar, so I would sometimes think...
Did you ever get so drunk you thought it was him?
I never got so drunk that I thought it was really him, but I got drunk enough to think that I would walk over to him and say, "You look like Jimmy Durante," to which he replied, "Oh, I've never heard that before."
Meaning he had.
Yeah, meaning he had. Yeah, so it was an interesting period, but while I was there... I partied in all of these little clubs around town. Yeah, I mean, it was the 70s, you know, so it was, and it's the 70s in a small city, you know. I couldn't be further away from Hollywood or New York City or any of these other places. So you're just with the youth of Utica, you know.
Everybody probably wearing bell-bottom pants and a bad mouth in the country, man. Listen to punk rock.
Yeah, okay, well, thank you very much, Lou Gossett Jr.
Lou Gossett Jr.
That's what he said in that movie, though.
I know, he said that in Officer and a Gentleman.
What did he say?
In Officer and a Gentleman?
I love that movie. What did he say in the movie?
He said to the recruits, he said, "You've probably been bad-mouthing your country and listening to punk rock."
Oh, okay, yeah, he was giving them the reading the riot act, wasn't he?
I'm glad you got that out, General.
You know something? All it takes is just a little squeeze. Just a little squeeze.
What does that mean?
That's from the border, and he means trigger.
I'm kidding.
I beg your pardon. Trigger?
Yeah, like the horse.
Well, you...
Hey, what are you going to do? Hit the old man?
No, I was getting up, Phil, to go get a drink of water.
Oh, sorry. Upstate New York. So anyway, I was in a club one night listening to all of the 70s songs, and one of them was this Rufus, Tell Me Something Good. And the band that was playing, there was a band up there, they were playing this song, and speaking of somebody that looked just like someone, I thought I saw Chaka Khan on the stage. And believe me, I wasn't doing hallucinogenics, I wasn't doing any kind of psychedelics at all, and I don't think I was psychotic, but there she was. So I often have wondered from time to time, you know, if I actually saw... I know I didn't see Jimmy Durante.
But you think maybe you saw this young lady Chaka Khan, huh?
Chaka Khan, yeah. But I doubt it, seriously.
I don't think Rufus would have been playing some downtown Utica, New York club. I could be wrong, but I doubt it.
No, you're right. It's, all right.
You probably hoped that it was, Rufus.
Yeah, I kind of did, you know. But that's like the time I had a birthday party, my 50th birthday party. I hired a band, a really good band called Moving Targets. These guys did blues, but they had a part of their act where they dressed up like ZZ Top. Okay, they put on long beards, and they had the spinning guitars, and it was great, and they did all the ZZ Top music. Well, some guy shows up to the party late, and these guys are now into the ZZ Top part of the act, and this guy, this friend of mine, thought that I'd hired ZZ Top.
Oh, for God's sake.
I mean, it's not too respectful of ZZ Top, is it?
I wouldn't think so. You know how far you have to fall to be playing your driveway? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, to be playing my driveway.
That's what it was.
Yeah, that was my driveway, all right. Okay, folks, well, that's the end of that, and there can't be, all the wreckage is, just forget it. Don't forget to check out our podcast tomorrow on The World of Phil Hendry on the Sideshow Network, and, of course, you can listen to a podcast of this show here on our website tomorrow as well with a backstage pass. World-famous Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. We really appreciate Nikki McKee and all of the assistance she's been giving our radio show. Alex Cohen, who's our operations guy, as well. I'd like to thank Bud Dickman and you, Robert Leonard, and Margaret Gray, and General Galen Shaw. And, of course, I want to thank me, Phil Hendry. Thanks, Phil. You're welcome.
What an ego.
Yep.